Don Machholtz, and you are listening to Looking Up with Don. This is the Looking Up with Don podcast, episode number 13 for the week of April 1st, 2020. The related website for this podcast is donmachholtz.com. That is spelled donmachholz.com, two H's. What's up in the sky this week? As our week begins on Wednesday, April 1st, the moon is at first quarter. It's in our evening sky. Over the next week, the moon will be moving towards full moon on April 7th. In our evening sky, Venus meets the Seven Sisters, also known as the Pleiades. The very bright planet Venus passes through the southern part of the Pleiades, taking a full day to travel the length of the cluster. The center of the passage is at about 10 p.m. on Friday, April 3rd, Universal Time, meaning England will get a good view of it at about 10 p.m. That translates to about 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, or in either case, the evening of April 3rd will be the peak of the passage. The Eastern Hemisphere can see it the early phase of this passage on the evening of April 3rd, and the later phase of the passage the next night on the evening of April 4th. Other good views can be had in the days leading up to and after April 3rd and 4th, as Venus will be in the vicinity of the Pleiades. This is a real good photo opportunity. We used to look at Betelgeuse each week because it had dimmed significantly. But a few weeks ago, it began to recover, and now it's nearing its normal brightness. Let this be a lesson. It has recovered, and so will we. In the morning sky, Jupiter creeps to within 6 degrees of Saturn and stays that close until early July, when it will back off a bit. By September, Jupiter will be closing in again on Saturn, providing a close passage on December 20th, when they're both in our western twilight sky. Meanwhile, the planet Mars is breaking away from the group this month, and Mars will reach opposition on October 13th of this year. The International Space Station is visible depending upon your location. You are unlikely to see it at midnight because the sun must be shining on it while you are in twilight or darkness. Therefore, you'll see it either in your morning sky or in your evening sky near twilight, and some nights you will not be able to see it at all. This week, north of about 45 degrees north, you may see it in the evening sky only for the first half of this next week, April 1st through the 4th. Between about 35 and 45 degrees north latitude, you can see it in the evening sky perhaps twice per night. As you move towards the equator, you'll not see it until the last part of next week, and then it will be in your evening sky. From the equator to about 35 degrees south, you'll not see it at all. South of that, in your morning sky, you'll see it sometimes twice per morning. To determine where it will be in your sky, you can go to the website heavens-above.com, enter your location, then click on ISS. For the past 2 weeks, I've been discussing public star parties, where you set up one telescope or more and invite the neighbors or community or even the whole county to come out and look at the sky. By far, the greatest and grandest star party I ever coordinated was a series of 7 star parties on 7 consecutive nights from 7 different sites. It became known as 7 Nights from 7 Sites. But originally the name of the project was Starry, Starry Nights in the Foothills. Let me set the scene. It is 2002. I'm living in Northern California in Colfax and had been doing public star parties and classes at the Placer Nature Center for about 9 years. I had several other astronomers who would do these star parties with me. Each year, we held about 5 to 10 public star parties, some held in light-polluted skies of Auburn and some of the surrounding communities, and some of those star parties were held up in the darker skies, mostly in the Sierras. In early 2002, I thought, and this is how it all began, why not hold a series of star parties all around the foothills and lower Sierras so that our guests would not need to drive so far to see the sky under dark skies? The idea occurred to me that we could hold these star parties on consecutive nights, and each would be at a different location. I contacted some of the other astronomers, and they were on board. Now, we had already, from the beginning of the year, scheduled the star parties for 2002, and we had one scheduled for Big Bend, California, on Saturday, August 31st. Now, the moon was out of the evening sky. It was about third quarter. With a start time of 8:30 and the star party lasting until 10, well, I thought, why not duplicate this on the other nights? The only major planet visible was Venus. We did have the planets Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. They were up, and we also had the summer Milky Way. So I got out a map and looked within 80 miles of Colfax. The elevation increases to the east and to the north, and that's where I concentrated. To the east, we had Forest Hill. Up north was Big Bend and a few ski resorts. We had never set up at a ski resort, so I contacted a few. Two of them were favorable to the idea, Sugar Bowl and Soda Springs. I visited both of them and looked over the horizon and light pollution situations. We could set up in their parking lots. So those were two locations that we could use. At one point, there was a member of the community who wanted to help run the event, and she suggested and expected that we would charge the public to attend the star parties. Now, we have never charged anyone for our public star parties, and we did not want to start, so she kind of lost interest in the event. Later in this podcast, I'll discuss private star parties where you can charge if you want. In the Forest Hill area, there were a couple of possible locations. I checked out the Sugar Pine Reservoir Bolt Launch parking lot, and then a second location about 10 miles east called China Wall. Now, China Wall was a rest stop parking lot with a lot of tall trees, but we could work around those. The Sugar Pine Reservoir looked really good, too. In the Colfax area, I visited the old Colfax landfill about a mile east of the city. It provided a lot of great features, low horizons, dark skies, a paved driveway, and a paved parking area, and it could hold hundreds of people. When I approached the city about using it, I learned that it had a problem. This old landfill had been sealed over with asphalt, and the decomposition of the trash under the asphalt was supposedly releasing methane gas, which could be of some danger. I met with the city council and asked permission, but it was denied. The opposition, led by a council member who seemed to enjoy telling people they could not do things. So we had to look elsewhere. Colfax High School has a football field, so I inquired about that, and they said yes. We had never set up in a football field, and in fact, they said stay off the field. But we could use the end zone and the inland area in the north end of the field. The stadium lights would be turned off for the event. Now, Dutch Flat is a small town about 10 miles up the freeway from Colfax. It has an area about a mile northwest of the town known as the Diggins, and we could set up there for one of the nights. So we had our seven sites. My next job was to put together the Star Party schedule. On Wednesday, August 28th, we start at Sugar Bowl Ski Resort. The next night, Thursday, would be at China Wall near Forest Hill. Friday, Colfax High School. Saturday at Big Bend. Sunday evening at Sugar Pine Reservoir near Forest Hill. Monday at Dutch Flat, and we finished up on Tuesday at Soda Springs Ski Resort. In the weeks prior, I traveled through the area posting colorful flyers advertising the event. The community was interested in this, and almost everywhere I went, I said, could I hang up this flyer? And people said, yes, please do. We want to go. We were in the newspaper, and we were on the radio. I advertised it at my workplace, and more people became interested. The week went off without a hitch. We had good weather and good crowds. More than 500 people, averaging about 70 per night, showed up to look at the stars. My loyal team of astronomers showed up, and we had a great time. After a week, though, we were happy to have a break. Following the event, I sent thank you notes to the astronomers and those locations which hosted us. The next year, 2003, we did not really try to top this. That year, recognizing that our smallest crowds had been on the weekdays, we held two consecutive weekends in August of 2003 when Mars would be near opposition. We still called it Starry, Starry Nights. The first weekend, August 15 to 17, was held at Colfax on Friday night at the end of Whitcomb Avenue, which is a court on the south side of town with no improvements. They turned off the billboard lights for us along the freeway. On Saturday, we were at Big Bend, and on Sunday, we were at Sugar Pine Reservoir near Forest Hill. Now, the next weekend, we were at three more places. At the Nevada County Airport in Nevada City, an abandoned airport, at Sugar Bowl Ski Resort, and at Dutch Flat. We had good weather and good-sized crowds, and about 400 people showed up for the six nights. The third and last year of Starry, Starry Nights was just one full weekend in mid-August of 2004. Friday was at Sugar Pine Reservoir near Forest Hill, Saturday at Big Bend, and Sunday night at Dutch Flat. Once again, good skies and good crowds, about 145 people. That was the last of our Starry, Starry Nights program. It was great and ambitious. In future years, as we did in prior years, and even as we did during the years we did the Starry, Starry Night program, we continue doing our typical 5 to 10 public star parties per year. That schedule continued through the year 2017, when I handed the program over to another astronomer and I prepared to move to Arizona. Let's talk a little bit about private star parties. These are not like the public ones we've talked about the last 3 weeks, where you put out the invitation and whoever wants to come will show up. You might want to consider a private star party where you and a few others set up telescopes for a specific group. You'll get these gigs, usually through word of mouth, often at a public star party. Someone might ask you if you could hold one for their birthday party or pool party or open house or whatever activity they might have in mind. Over the last 25 years, I've held private star parties at a country club, which was limited to those in the exclusive subdivision, and we set up in the community center overlooking the golf course. We've done star parties at a woman's pool party several years in a row. You got free food, and if you want to go swimming in the pool, you can do that. A few years, we went to a family's house every year where the local homeschoolers met. Several churches throughout the years have had private star parties. the California Conservation Corps class. I've done star parties for them. We did them for the Sierra Club in the Sierra Nevada Mountains several years in a row. At my house in Colfax, we would have school groups or church groups come by, and also for various schools. With these types of star parties, the guests are usually there the whole time. They typically want to be there, and they want to learn. You might be asked to say a few words or even give a small talk about astronomy, kind of an introduction of sorts, and explain what you'll be seeing that night. You may not have too much control over your local environment. That is, you may have high horizons at that person's house, or the local light pollution situation should be understood and negotiated prior to the star party. You will usually know in advance about how many people to expect, and you may have to employ the help of other astronomers. Conducting a star party at a school is a special circumstance, and many, many astronomy clubs are involved in the local schools. In fact, most astronomy clubs do have a school star party program, and they're in contact with the local schools, and some go to schools every couple times a month. I have often given an astronomy talk to a class in the daytime, and then we go out and safely look at the sun. Other times it's a lecture in the daytime with a nighttime observing session held later. Sometimes it's only an evening star party with a short astronomy talk beforehand. You know what? You can sometimes get paid for private star parties. We sometimes did. I had considered setting up a business of renting me and my telescope out for birthday parties and other social activities, but I could never see it as a steady income, so I did not pursue it. There is a need for this, and if you put yourself out there, I bet one could produce a solid, steady side job. I know of one individual who has a portable, inflatable planetarium, and he went around to schools and got paid for astronomy shows. I have learned that most schools have a fund set aside for assemblies, and if you put together a good astronomy show and demonstration, you might be able to get yourself hired at local schools. Always arrive on time, with a few handouts, and in a social mood. They are hiring not just your telescope, but you. So give them your full attention. Most astronomy clubs have private star parties that are held only for the members of the club. Now, I have found that many clubs have an observing site or two that only they use, and some clubs have an observatory and a permanently mounted telescope on site. For those clubs, you can learn how to use a telescope after you become a member, and they will give you a key to the observatory so that you can use it when you wish. It is not unusual for one of the members to open up their property for members of their club. So if the club doesn't have its own site, maybe they will be going to one of the members' homes to do astronomy. Are you ready to observe a bright comet? I am, and a lot of people are. We hope to have one in our northern evening sky over the next few months. This comet is Comet Atlas 2019 Y4, and it continues to brighten in our northern evening sky. A recent measurement of the nucleus size suggests it's about 10 kilometers in radius, or about 12 miles in diameter. Now, if this is true, this would be a fairly large nucleus for a comet. 7 years ago, there was a comet known as Comet Ison, and it was expected to put on a good show around Thanksgiving of that year, but it disintegrated as it rounded the sun. We only learned later that the comet had a much smaller nucleus than expected. It was perhaps 2 kilometers across at the most, and perhaps only 0.8 kilometers in diameter. Comet Ison went 20 times closer to the sun than Comet Atlas will attain. Some are suggesting that Comet Atlas will also disintegrate as it approaches the sun. Only time will tell. But if, in fact, the nucleus of this comet is fairly large, it's unlikely it will disintegrate. It is possible it could split or break apart. If that happens, it may brighten even more for a short period of time of a day or two. Now, Comet Atlas is expected to brighten in our evening sky, with the best show expected to be between around May 9th, when the moon gets out of our evening sky, and May 20th. And by May 20th, the comet will be fairly low on your northwestern horizon and getting closer to the sun. During that time span, May 9th to May 20th, if it behaves normally, it will brighten up quite a bit. Now, how memorable it will be after that depends upon how bright it gets as it enters the twilight area. And from the northern hemisphere, it will then be visible in both the morning and evening sky. Now, if the comet is not too bright, it will be kind of lost in the twilight. But if it is strong in its brightness, it will be easily visible despite the twilight. After it goes around the sun on May 31st, it's more visible in the southern hemisphere, but it stays fairly close to the sun as seen from the Earth. Again, if it's of normal brightness, then it will be difficult to see. It won't be very spectacular. But if it's very, very bright, it will be visible in the southern hemisphere, even though it's fairly close to the sun. But now is the time to get out there and look at it. It is visible in binoculars. You might want to wait until after moonset this week if you want a dark sky. Podcast 13, maps 1 and 2, show the position for both this comet and another comet we've been following, known as Comet 2017 T2 Pan-STARRS. The position on map number 2 is for 0 hours universal time on the dates indicated. Comet Atlas is now the brighter of the two comets, and it can be seen in binoculars at about magnitude 7 or brighter. Over the next week or two, it's possible we'll have our first unaided eye sighting of Comet Atlas. Comet Pan-STARRS is about magnitude 9. Now, this week is a good week to view the planet Venus in the daytime. Let's pick it up with the unaided eye, then with binoculars, then with a telescope. Now, Venus is bright. It reaches its brightest around now, and it's far from the sun, so this makes this comparatively easy. You can go out and look about 40 degrees east and 18 degrees north of the sun, and there it will be. However, there is an easier way, and it will take a little bit of time to do it this way. Go outside at least 3 hours before sunset. Look for the sun casting a shadow caused by a tall tree or the corner of the roof of a building. It doesn't really matter what, but make sure that the area to the north of the solar region has a clear sky. If you use a building, for instance, use the north side of the building, not the south side. Now, to do this, you do not need to look at the sun, but instead look down at the shadow cast by the tree or the building. Position yourself so that the shadow of your head is at the edge of the shadow. For instance, if you're using the top of a pine tree, line the shadow of your head up with the shadow of the top of the tree. So you're not looking at the sun to do this. You're looking down at the ground at the shadow behind you. For a corner of the roof of a building, stand so that the shadow of your head is at the corner shadow of the building. Mark this place on the ground where you are standing with a board or a rock or something. And before leaving this spot, set a timer. Most of you have timers on your phones. Set a timer for 2 hours and 54 minutes. And then go do something else for 2 hours and 54 minutes. You don't need to stand there. But when your timer goes off, go back and stand at the same spot. Now, the sun has moved, as has the sun's shadow, but we don't care about the sun anymore. we are going to find Venus. Look up to the sky towards where the sun was when you made your first observation. You'll be looking at a treetop or corner of a building's roof. Venus is not there. Venus is 18 degrees north of that spot. Now, by north, I mean towards the North Star, which is not visible in your sky because it's daytime. But if you're facing east, it is to your left. If you're facing west, it is to your right. So, how much is 18 degrees? Stick out your arm and open your hand. From the end of your thumb to the end of your smallest finger is about 20 degrees. If you put your thumb aside and just spread out your four fingers, or just the index finger and the small finger, from the end of your index finger to the end of your little finger is about 12 degrees. So from your smallest finger to your thumb is 20. From your index finger to your smallest finger is about 12. So we're looking for something that's 18 degrees north of your beginning point. Now, if needed, shield the sun from your eyes. Now, scan around in the expected area for the planet Venus. The biggest problem of this daytime observation is making sure your eyes are focused at infinity. It's hard to do that in the open sky. You can look at a distant mountain or cloud, then back to the expected place. Slowly scan around and be patient. Take a few minutes and relax. Once you see it and come back to it, it will seem like a very easy object. It will look like a bright star up in the sky. If you're still having trouble seeing it with the unaided eye, try a pair of binoculars, which should make it easier. And to do that, first, focus the binoculars on a distant object, a distant mountain, something at least a few hundred yards away, so that your binoculars are focused at infinity. Then, look up to the sky to where Venus should be. Once you have found Venus, walk to the south a little bit while watching Venus, don't trip, until the planet is where the sun was in reference to the tree or building roof line less than 3 hours before. This will make it easier to see. Mark this spot where you are now standing on the ground. Tomorrow, at the same time, go back and find Venus again. It should be at about the same place at the same time every day for the next week. Again, if you have binoculars, look at it through binoculars because that is usually an easier way to find it than with the unaided eye. Our telescope challenge is also to observe a Venus in the daytime. This allows you to see it higher in the sky with a bit less contrast. And if you go out on April 3rd and look for Venus and find Venus, then be reminded that the Pleiades, the seven sisters, are just north of Venus. You may be able to pick up some of the stars in the daytime from the Pleiades just north of the planet Venus. Many professional observatories get their best images of both Mercury and Venus when they're high in the sky during the day. Venus handles high magnifications very well, so you can crank up the magnification on it. Now for fun with the Messe Marathon. Most Astronomy Club Messe Marathon star parties have been canceled these past 2 weeks due to the coronavirus. But you can still do the Messe Marathon on your own. I was out on the night of March 15 to 16 with my 6-inch telescope and saw 109 objects, missing only M30. Now, the moon was last quarter in the evening sky. You can still do the Messe Marathon with the moon in the sky. But since most of the brighter Messe objects are in the morning sky, if you're going to have a moon, try to have it in the morning sky, not the evening sky. Following a few nights of cloudy weather, I finally had another clear night. And on March 23rd, 24th, I found 110 objects, this time using my 10-inch f3.8 reflector telescope. I did this one finding the objects from memory, which I've done 22 times since 2003. No maps, no setting circles. It's faster and easier this way. This is the first time since 1990 that I've used anything other than my 6-inch reflector for the Massey Marathon. I found it was easier with a 10-inch than the 6-inch telescope because the finder aperture was larger on the 10-inch and the field of view on the main scope was larger, making it easier to find things. The Massey objects also were more apparent in the 10-inch telescope than in the 6-inch telescope. Now, that evening, I had some occasional clouds passing through, and I had to work my way around them. The night of March 24th, 25th, I attempted the Massey Marathon again, this time with a 16-inch reflector on a Dobsonian mount. Now, this is the first time I've ever attempted a Massey Marathon on a Dobsonian mount, and this is also the largest telescope I've ever used for a marathon. I picked up the first 66 objects in the first 90 minutes and had seen everything that was above the horizon. So I went to bed. I got up to finish the Massey Marathon early in the morning, and it was cloudy. Now, this was the 15th time this has happened to me. That is, I do the first half of the Massey Marathon, and then when I come out in the morning to finish it up, it's been cloudy. I have had 42 Massey Marathons in which I was able to complete it in the morning with fairly good weather throughout the whole night. So about a quarter of my Massey Marathon attempts end up being clouded out before the night's over. That happens. It's kind of typical. You start off when you have a clear evening, hoping that it's clear in the morning. If you have a forecast for a cloudy evening but a clear morning coming up, well, then you can only do the morning objects and you'll miss all the evening objects. That's just the way it goes. In March and April are fairly cloudy times for much of the Southwest, believe it or not. It is possible to do Massey Marathons in other parts of the year, and we'll be talking a little bit about that next week. You have been listening to Looking Up with Don, podcast episode number 13 for April 1st, 2020. Once again, the related website for this podcast where you get the free star maps is donmachholz.com. That is spelled donmachholz.com. Two H's. God willing and pod willing, I'll be back next week for another episode of Looking Up with Don. We will discuss what's going on in the sky. We'll take another shot of seeing a shadow cast by the light of Venus. I'll discuss Comet Atlas. And we'll talk about doing the Massey Marathon during other parts of the year. Thank you for listening. See the sky this week. I'll see you next week.